Let's start again now. So I'm going to continue with the theme that we're talking about so far. So now I've been basically talking about the relationship between virtue and meditation practice. So now I'm going to look more at how to actually how to work with the mind directly so as to remove problems in the mind. And the main problem I'm going to focus on initially is just the problem of anger and ill will and irritation and that sort of thing, for many reasons. The main reason, because this is the most problematic one in terms of meditation practice. If you have any kind of remaining anger or ill will there, it's going to be a big hindrance to meditation. And also it's a big hindrance to happiness, it's a big hindrance to being able to work with people around you. It causes so many problems, this thing with anger and ill will. So it's good to have a sense of how can I overcome this particular problem. And this sutta is basically about how to overcome that. It's called removing resentment. And resentment here stands really for all types of ill will. That's essentially what this is about. Okay, this sutta is spoken by Venerable Sariputta. And he is, in the suttas, talked about as like the right-hand disciple of the Buddha. So the Buddha says, always said that if there's anyone who can kind of continue teaching the Dhamma, if I'm not there, it's always Venerable Sariputta who is talked about. He's kind of the main, supposed to be the best in wisdom among the disciples of the Buddha. So this is what he says about removing anger or ill will or resentment. There, the Venerable Sariputta addressed the bhikkhus. Friends, bhikkhus. Friend, those bhikkhus replied. The Venerable Sariputta said this. Friends, there are these five ways of removing resentment by which a bhikkhu should entirely remove resentment when it has arisen toward anyone. What five? Here, a person's bodily behavior is impure, but his verbal behavior is pure. One should remove resentment towards such a person. A person's verbal behavior is impure, but his bodily behavior is pure. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, but from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, the placidity of the mind. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, and he does not gain an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind from time to time. One should also remove resentment toward such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are pure, and from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind. One should also remove resentment toward such a person. Okay, so that is the summary of that suttas. Five types of people. And this is often how the suttas are structured. Structured with a summary first, and then an elaboration in the middle of the different types that are summarized at the beginning. So it's like a very, it's a good way of memorizing things, this way here, of setting things up. So as somebody who's skilled at giving a talk or speaking, you would see they often use this particular setup. And of course the point here is that these five ways of removing resentment, they encompass all types of people, right? There's nobody here that is not included in this particular list. It goes from the most saintly person who's completely pure to the most unsaintly kind of scallywag, where everything is impure, and you have everything in between as well, right? So all types of people are included in this particular particular list here. So, and of course, that is the whole point. The whole point is that there isn't any need to be angry, right? There's no need for these things. If you use your perception, you use your mind in a wise way, it's possible, at least to a large extent, to avoid anger in the vast majority of cases. Occasionally, it is perhaps, for most people, occasionally it will still happen because it's very hard to overcome completely. But it is actually, theoretically at least, possible to overcome it completely by using these kind of methods. Yeah, and in particular, when you use this for removing anger, and then use the opposite, the developing of metta, for establishing a positive mind state, and the two together is a very powerful way of developing the mind. Okay, so let us see how we are supposed to use these methods. This is one of my, I always like to read the sutta out on these sort of retreats, because I think this is very useful for a lot of people. The first one. And how, friend, should resentment be removed toward the person whose bodily behavior is impure, but whose verbal behavior is pure? Suppose a rag-robed bhikkhu monk sees a rag by the roadside. He would press it down with his left foot, spread it out with his right foot, tear off an intact section, and take it away with him. So too, when a person's bodily behavior is impure, but his verbal behavior is pure, on that occasion, one should not attend to the impurity of his bodily behavior, but should instead attend to the purity of his verbal behavior. In this way, resentment toward that person should be removed. Right? So, the point of this is that most people have a number of different qualities, right? You can, if you look at the person, you can look at the person from many different angles. Here it distinguishes between bodily action and verbal action, but we can distinguish this in many, many different ways. And usually if you look at someone, you can always, almost in all people, you can find something good and you can find something bad. There's kind of, we're all kind of a bit of a mixed bag, right? So because of that, it is possible, if you are skilled, to actually focus just on those good qualities in the person. Not always easy, right? I mean, it's often quite hard to do that. But the point is that this is a skill that you can actually learn, to be able to focus on the good qualities in someone. And to be able to develop that skill, this is something that you have to train in. So what you have to do in these kind of cases is that you particularly, we often have particular people we find are difficult, right? This is just life. There are certain people we find hard to deal with. So if you have a person who is hard to deal with for you, who is easy for you to get angry towards or upset towards, then you have to learn to focus on the good qualities in that person. And the more, it's basically the more you are able to turn your attention to the good qualities, in particular when you're feeling relaxed, when you come on a retreat, right, you come to Dharana Grove, here you have a bit of extra time. So the people, you know, back in your ordinary life that you're normally around, they're a bit away from you right now. So now is a good time to turn your mind towards the good qualities of those people, because you have distance, you have a bit of separation. So this is a good time. So remember those, build them up. Think how wonderful it is that this person actually has good qualities. What a remarkable thing that is. Why is it not obvious that people should have good qualities, right? How can people have good qualities at all? Isn't that a wonderful thing? And then focus on that and then build it up. And at the same time, what you also have to do in these cases, you also have to try to understand and forgive the negative qualities, right? And when you think about this world, what this world is like, and how difficult life can be sometimes, it is no wonder that people have some bad qualities, often do bad things. So try to understand why they are the way they are, why things are this way. And then you start to understand. I was just talking to one of the Anagarikas a couple of days ago, and he grew up, at least in part, in a small town in the southwest of Western Australia. And he told me that in this town where he grew up, there was a Catholic church and there was an Anglican church, and people went to different churches. And he said that one of those, the priest apparently, the Anglican church, apparently he was a pedophile or something. And many of the young boys that went to that church had been abused by this particular priest, right? And then he said that, of course, what happens, that many of these young boys who grew up in that kind of environment, they became very troubled people, right? They became troublemakers at school, they became troublemakers at home. And of course, they got told off all the time because they were troublemakers. Nobody realized what was going on behind the scenes. Nobody understood this. So this is like, once you see the bigger picture of something, once you understand that there is a reason for the troubled behavior, for the problems in people, then you can't forgive, right? But it's so hard. When we don't, often we don't see the reasons why people are in a certain way. And because we don't see the reasons, that's why we find it hard to forgive and let go of things. But remember, there's always a reason, right? There's always a reason why someone is difficult. There's always a reason why someone has a difficult personality. There's always something in the past, if not in this life, in some other life. And just by remembering now that there's always a reason, already there, you can start to forgive and let go. No wonder people are a bit troubled sometimes. No wonder they can be difficult. No wonder they have these things inside of them which are hard to deal with. So try to understand that. And I always like to quote this beautiful French saying, which is that to understand all is to forgive all. Because to understand is to understand the causes and conditions that brought this troubled behavior into existence in the first place. To understand all is to forgive all, right? So try to understand. Then you can forgive the difficulties and you can look and see how marvelous it is that this person has some good qualities after all. So this is how you have to think, and it's very possible for all of us to turn our attention around and learn to see the good rather than focusing on the bad. It's too easy often to focus on the bad things, so we have to actually learn to go against the stream and focus on the good things instead. So this is the way this is done. Then is the simile here is like a ragged-robed bhikkhu, right? Sometimes you will see monks or perhaps nuns too, who would, particularly in those days, but even now sometimes, who wear rag robes. The idea is that you collect all these rags, all this cloth wherever you find it, and you sew it together into a robe. So it's all rags. That was one of the practices that were done to be like. Find a sense of contentment with simple things in life. This rag robe tears off all the dodgy parts. You know, sometimes this would be on a corpse, perhaps. You tear off all the stinking, smelly parts of a cloth, and you take the part which you actually can use for a robe. And then you use that to make your rag robe. In the same way, you focus narrowly on those good qualities. There is another sutta which talks about this particular practice as well, and this is the Vitakka Santana Sutta. It's in the Majjhima Nikaya number 20, and it gives five ways of overcoming unwholesome thinking. And the first way there is said to be the idea of substitution, and this is essentially what we're seeing here. The idea of substitution is that you can see that your mind is starting to lean towards something negative. You're starting to focus on the negative aspect of somebody. So straight away, before that thought is allowed to take hold in your mind, and this is really the trick here, these thoughts, they grow often from the very beginning, they're very small, and then they grow up and become very strong, and eventually become like a train with a massive momentum, and you can't stop them anymore. The trick here is to catch them as early as you possibly can, right? So the idea of substitution, as soon as you see something is about to arise which is negative, straight away you focus back and you focus on the positive aspect. So you move your mind, you move your attention from the negative to the positive. And you have to be quick. And this is the idea of substitution. So for that to work again, what you have to do is you have to have like a bank of perceptions in your mind, of positive perceptions. You have to have those ready so they can move in and take the place of the negative thought as soon as you possibly can. So remind yourself again and again of the positive and the good. And when that becomes large and that becomes important, then you're able to use this idea of substitution. So that is the first way that is mentioned in that sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. The second way that is mentioned is the idea of remembering the danger in the unwholesome thinking, right? Where does it lead? Where does it take you? And very often the unwholesome thoughts, in particular anger, it leads to enormous trouble in all kinds of ways. It leads to troubles in relationships, it leads to suffering and pain right here and now. What does it feel like to be angry compared to being really serene and at ease and at peace? There's a massive difference there, right? And once you see that, you move away from that danger. And also the danger, of course, in remembering that one of the things when we talk about rebirth in Buddhism Remember that the mind that you're developing in this life, that is the mind you're taking with you into the future, right? So you're going to have to live with this mind in the future as well. So why not then purify this mind now? Do you want to take that anger and negativity with you into the future? Or would you like to take a more purified version of yourself into the future? To see the danger, taking this into the future. Who knows in your next life where that anger is going to lead you next time around? You just don't know. There's a big danger there of this leading you astray, getting you out of control, and eventually taking you to something very unpleasant. So remembering the danger, again, is something which kind of pushes you away and says, makes it easier for you to focus on the good aspects in that person. So all of these things are like skillful means of moving you back, moving you on the right track here. So, okay, so you focus on those good qualities, and by doing that, then you abandon that resentment towards that particular person. And this is how you go about this. Okay, so let's have a look at the first one. Let's move on to the second one. This is very similar, but the simile is slightly different. How, friends, should resentment be removed toward the person whose verbal behavior is impure, but whose bodily behavior is pure? Suppose there is a pond covered with algae and water plants. A man might arrive afflicted and oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty, and parched. He would plunge into the pond, sweep away the algae and water plants with his hands, drink from his cupped hands, and then leave. So too, when a person's verbal behavior is impure, but his bodily behavior is pure, on that occasion, one should not attend to the impurity of his verbal behavior, but should instead attend to the purity of his bodily behavior. In this way, resentment toward that person should be removed. So this is like the exact parallel to the previous one, except that now there is a different aspect of the person that you're looking at. And in this case, the simile is slightly different. You can see here the simile is the idea of someone who is parched, they are hot, right? They are weary, it's a warm day, and you feel, you know, you are oppressed and afflicted. And of course, that is the simile for someone who is angry, right? When you're angry, it's like you are oppressed by the anger. Anger is an oppression. It's an oppression because it doesn't feel good. It feels bad for yourself. And so what you're doing here is you're learning to push aside the oppressing things. And here, part of the oppressing things are the algae and water plant. This is what leads to the oppression here. So you push those aside, and then you drink from your cupped hands of the pure water. The pure water here is the purity of the bodily behavior, which remains, right? And when you drink from the good behavior, you drink from the good aspect of a person, that's when the weariness disappears, right? You're drinking in the good qualities. It's like a removal of affliction by drinking up all the good sides of a person. It's a nice way of looking at it, isn't it? You're removing your oppression in yourself by being able to see the good aspect in someone else. So this is that simile there. So again, this is then about just focusing on a different aspect of the person, right? So depending on the type of person, you have to focus on different aspects. Maybe I should, I also often like to talk a little bit about, at this point, about just general ways of overcoming anger and ill will. What are ways to deal with these things? I think it's probably very useful, at least for some people. Some of the general ways of overcoming these kind of things. One of the ways is to remember that very often, actually, almost always, it doesn't work. It doesn't get you anywhere, right? You get angry with someone, you get upset about something, and very often it just leads to problems, to trouble. It gets you further away from a solution than if you hadn't gotten angry in the first place. We think that somehow, if we get angry, it's going to solve the problem. We're going to tell them off, and they will then they will understand, right? And it will solve the problem. It doesn't work like that, and we know that. We tell somebody off, and they get defensive, and then they get upset, and then, you know, it kind of reverberates back and forth, and it doesn't actually work out. If we tell somebody, when we feel kindness inside, when we feel a sense of compassion and understanding, that's when other people open up their ears and actually listen to you. Then that's when they're willing to take on board your advice. If you're lucky, even then they might not be willing to do it. At least then there is some chance. If you're angry, it doesn't work. And if it works, they do so out of fear, right? They are afraid of you, or they are upset about what you're saying, or they do it for the wrong reasons very often. It takes a very strong and special person to be able to listen to someone else who is angry. Usually it doesn't work out. So remember that, anger doesn't work, right? And if you remember that anger doesn't work, then why get angry in the first place? And that is often enough. If you can make that a real strong perception in you, that's often enough to move your mind away from the anger and kind of reestablish it in kind of neutrality instead. So this is the first way, and I think it's often a very powerful way, is to just remember that this idea that it actually doesn't work. The second way that I often like to talk about is to remember that when people do bad things, it's usually not because they want to do something bad, right? So if someone has some bad character trait that you really dislike, that you find very difficult, it's not because they want to be a bad person. Most of us realize that goodness is a way of feeling happy about yourself. So if you, I think almost all people realize that. I think it's very obvious. Now, if someone is bad despite that, what it means is that they are bad despite their better knowledge, despite the better wisdom and understanding. They can't help themselves, basically. They have to do these things. They're conditioned in a way to do things which are not very nice, not kind, are wrong. So remember that. Someone who does something which is stupid, they talk in a harsh way, or they act in a bad way, or they even think in a bad way, they do that often even though they don't actually want this. So then how do you feel about that person when that happens? Again, then you can have a sense of compassion, right? What you're doing here is you're taking the focus away from yourself. Instead of thinking about yourself, oh, I have to deal with this, it's terrible, I am suffering, which is a natural response to most of us, right? We tend to feel this way, this kind of, because we are closest to ourselves. So we always think about how we feel about things. But instead of doing that, focus on the other person. And understand that the other person is actually doing things often against their better judgment. They don't really want to be like this, but they are trapped by causes and conditions. They are trapped by their past. They are trapped by whatever, and they are incapable of actually doing anything different from what they are doing most of the time. Right? So again, this is a very powerful way of looking at it. And then you don't feel so upset. It doesn't become so personal anymore. It's got to do with them, nothing to do with you, really. It's about them and not you. You just happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, and that's why you get the brunt of this. And this is like that simile you find in Ajahn Brahm's book about in the opening door of your heart, the simile of the red light, right? And he tells a story there of this man who was who was stopped by the red light. He was in a hurry. He was needed to go somewhere very fast, to a meeting somewhere or something like that. And then just as he comes to the crossroads, the light goes red, right? And he gets really angry and upset and starts yelling at this red light. You terrible red light. You knew I was coming around the corner. You're doing it just to spite me. You evil red light. I don't know if he actually said that, but he got obviously angry and upset, right? And it's comical. And it's weird, because we know that it is ridiculous. And of course, people are just like that. They are like red lights. They don't do bad things because they want to be bad towards us. They do bad things because sometimes they go red, right? Sometimes they become red like a red light. Sometimes they're green. Sometimes they're yellow. And this is just the conditioning, just what it is to be human. And this is, of course, part of this idea of non-self, that what we are is largely made up of the cause and conditions of the past that we bring with us, either into this life or that have conditioned us in this life. So think like this, right? If you think like that, well, is there anything you can't forgive? Probably not, right? You can probably forgive anything if you think like that. This person is trapped by their own cause and conditioning, trapped by their own past, incapable of acting differently. Wow, think for yourself, how easy is it to change your own character? It's pretty hard sometimes. And then how can we then ask other people to change their character when it's so hard for us to change ourselves. So we focus less on ourselves. We don't become so self-centered, although that is very natural in these cases. Focus on the other person instead. Then the anger disappears, and you can actually substitute it with compassion instead. Just one last thing before we take a quick break, just on the same kind of issue. Remember, it's the same part of the same kind of perception. Remember, it's never personal when people do something bad against you. They're not actually doing anything against you, right? This again is the idea of non-self. It feels personal. It feels like this person is doing something against us. It's not against you. They are doing something because they are triggered in a certain way. You happen to be there, or perhaps something you did triggered it. It's not actually against you. They are just reacting to certain causes and conditions. Right? So remember, it's never personal. If it isn't personal, again, it takes away a lot of the negativity and anger in that sort of situation. Okay, so let's just do a few minutes of meditation, and then we'll continue afterwards.